From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com. Pleasant good morning to you. This is Patrick Timpone, and you've got OneRadioNetwork.com. We're live here every morning, 9 to 11 o'clock. It's an honor to be here with you. OneRadioNetwork.com. All of the shows, we have over 1,000 free, 1,000 free podcasts for you. As members, no cost, you just sign up, send you a couple of broadcast alerts each week, and that's about it. No spamorama doodong. We just do it. And we get your support in dollars and in supporting our sponsors, and we make the ends meet. It's just amazing, isn't it? Well, it's July 21st, 2010. Tomorrow we're going to visit with Dr. Steve Hines, who's doing some great research on the viruses, bacteria, also Lyme disease, and he has some curious things to tell us about the fact that Lyme's is one of the few spirochetes that, in fact, is not a natural phenomena, but is a genetically engineered. Great. Friday, Open Phone Friday, Andrew Goss on Saturday, and the real World of Money every Saturday, 6 to 8 p.m., KLBJ Radio and OneRadioNetwork.com. We have open phones when we don't have a guest. This morning we're going to kick off with a guest and then get into some open phones a little bit later. And here's the phone number if you'd like to participate. It is 888-663-6386. Email patrick at oneradionetwork.com. On the phone with me, are you in the East Coast, Phil?
Yes.
I thought you might kind of sound like a New Yorker, maybe?
I might be.
Yeah, well, okay. PhilStockWorld.com, Phil Davis, good morning. Phil, you've been at this for your whole life, you say, investing, and just Phil Stock World about 4 years or so.
That's right.
What's about investing that, I mean, do you really make a lot of money? Like you live in this big palatial home there in New York on the Upper East Side and West Side? No?
Actually, I live in Jersey.
Jersey, well, that's okay.
Part of my investing premise was it was cheaper to live in Jersey.
So. Yeah. So are you what they call a day trader, Phil?
Oh, gosh. Well, I hate to say I'm a day trader. I mean, I think if I had to say the way it works is, I'm not a day trader, but I'm not adverse to taking profits on a trade that works in one day.
Ah, I like that. So,
you day trade these days because the market makes you day trade. I mean, this is an insane up and down market where any direction you pick is only right for a few minutes.
Well, that's not good. So, what is this? So, like the buy and hold thing of the years gone past. That not too many people do that anymore.
No, buy and hold is demonstrably a poor strategy right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate because what is it really doing? It's really getting the average investor out of the market, because the person who has a job, who has a real life and can't sit here trading all day,
right,
is getting whipsawed up and down by the markets. They never know how much they've got. It's as if your bank account just randomly goes up and down every day. It's a pointless exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not investing anymore. It's gambling. That's what this is. It's almost like going to a casino every day and seeing how much money you end up with.
So that's what you're doing. You're essentially doing legal, white-collar kind of creative gambling.
Yeah.
Well, it's great that you know that. I mean, at least you know where you stand.
Right. Well, a big premise of what we do is we teach people. It's interesting. We do a lot of work with options.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we're going to talk about that this morning. And you promised to teach us how to do this.
That's right. I could teach you how to do it.
Oh, cool. Okay.
The great thing about options is it's like in a casino. 100,000 people can walk into a casino every day,
right,
and not one of them is as rich as the guy who owns the casino.
Correct.
Because
I think we know
that.
Because
he's playing the opposite game. He's selling risk, and they're buying risk. And the funny thing about options is you can be the person selling the risk with no detriment. In other words, it's not like if you try to play the house with a craps game or something like that, and they're still stacked against you, the odds. it's absolutely dead even, where if you flip to the other side of the table and you sell options instead of buying them, you have a tremendous advantage over everyone else. You are the house.
When you sell options, let's see, when you sell options, you are the house, and so the odds are stacked against you, for you.
Yes, very much. Ridiculously so, frankly.
Really? So that's what you do a lot, and that's what you teach people at PhilStockWorld.com.
That's right.
You teach people. And then, so you have folks that become subscribers maybe for on a monthly basis, and then you help them along the way? Is that how it works?
Yeah, we teach option strategies. I mean, we have stock picks, of course, because there's no point in having strategies if you don't put them to use.
Yeah.
But, we teach option strategies. It's primarily a site that teaches people how to trade, how to manage portfolios, how to pick good stocks to sell against. In other words, you don't want to sell someone options on Apple because you don't know if Apple's going to be at 270 or 240 on any given day. You know, that doesn't help you. You want something, if you pick a steadier stock that you base off of and you sell options on that stock, then you have the advantage because you know your stock is going to stay in a certain range, hopefully, you know, usually they do. But if it goes out of that range, then that's when the option traders win. Because they're betting for things, they're betting for unnatural events. You're betting for natural events.
As selling options, just trying to get the landscape, you're betting that things are going to be kind of okay, cool. And the people that are buying options, they're thinking it's going to either go up a little ways or down a little ways or more than usual.
Mm-hmm.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm. So that's why you have less risk as selling options because more likely that things are not going to go really up or really down.
Well, I'll give you an example. If you say, let's say you buy Bank of America stock,
okay,
and it's right now it's $13.69. You can sell the January $14 call. That means that they get to buy it from you for $14. You own the stock at $13.70. Let's say they can buy it from you for $14, 30 cents higher.
In January,
sell that call
up until January.
Up until January, you sell that call for $1.50. That's 10% in 6 months. That money is cash that goes right to your account, so it lowers the basis on the stock you buy by $1.50. So now you've effectively paid $12 for your stock for Bank of America. So I've already taken a 10% discount off your purchase price in one day. If you get called away, and called away is not, there's no voodoo to this. Everybody thinks it's very complicated, but all the call contract is the man paid you $1.50,
right,
for the right to pay you another $14 in January.
Okay, so let's say that you're going to be the option trader and I'm going to be the buyer.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to pay you $14 for the right to buy Bank of America between now and
January. No, not 14. You're going to pay me $1.50.
Oh, just $1.50.
Yeah.
So I'm going to pay you $1.50, and then I get an option between now and January. I can buy Bank of America for $14.
Correct.
Okay. Now, do I send you that $1.50 today?
Yes.
Okay. So that's, I got to get that out
and
of the way.
And by the way, it's not this is a good way to explain it, but I want to be clear to you is that there's no me and you transaction. It's all handled by the broker automatically.
Yeah, it's all going through the thing.
Just like buying a stock. There's no difference.
Okay. So there is a middle person in there.
The broker.
I don't send Phil the $1.50.
There's not even a sending process. So in other words, if I want to sell those options, I can sell it in 2 seconds and I've got the cash in my account.
Wow. What? Oh, so you can sell like 1,000.
Yes.
So you could sell.
They sell in blocks of 100, in fact.
Oh, 100. Okay, so you buy 10 blocks, or let's just keep it simple in 100. So you sell a block of 100, January $14 option on Bank of America.
Correct.
And then 100 times $1.50, what is that? $150 goes into your account today.
Right.
You just made 150.
Basically you did.
I'll just go out to eat, man. What do you care? Okay, so you made 150. Now what happens?
Now nothing. See, if you want to own Bank of America, this is ideal if you wanted to own it anyway.
Yeah, like if you like the stock. Yeah.
In your account anyway, and it's doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now you're collecting. This is 10% in 6 months. What is your obligation? My obligation is that if you want to buy Bank of America from me in January, I have to have it. So I pretty much have to hold my stock for 6 months.
Oh, because you are also buying 100 shares at 1370.
Correct. I could sell what they call a naked option, which is I can sell it without owning the stock. That's very dangerous.
Yeah, we'll talk about that, but let's do the real ones.
Right.
So you take 1370 times 100 out of your account and buy 100 shares, then you sell an option for 100 and you make 150. So you just bought the stock, as you say, at about 10% discount.
Correct.
Okay, so now you're sitting there with those 100 shares. Now, if Bank America goes up to 1500 in a week, you screwed.
No, how are you screwed?
Well, because Patrick is going to exercise his $14 option.
Yeah.
And you got to sell to me for 1400 for 14 a share, but it's worth 15.
But I keep the $1.50 I got. I keep the 150 he gave me.
Hmm. Okay.
He's exercising his contract.
Oh.
You never have to give that the 150 back.
Oh. What about if Bank of America goes to $16?
You still only got... That's when you start having your regrets, right? Because what did you do? You effectively sold your stock for $15.50.
Correct.
That's what you did. If it goes to $150, you still have to sell it for $15.50.
Correct.
But that's not... But the point is...
Oh, but you still haven't lost any more money.
Listening right now make 10% every 6 months on their stocks.
Yeah.
And how much better would they be off in their retirement portfolios if their whole lives they had made 10% every 6 months selling options?
Wow. So, and also, let me see if I understand this, Phil, correctly. Even if the Bank of America go to 100, you still had to sell it at 1550, but you didn't lose any more. You just are kind of in anguish because you could have made a lot.
Yeah. It's a would have, could have, should have. But again, you're building up a 20% annual cushion. If you consistently sell these, and if you don't think of it that way, in other words, if you don't have this regret thing, which is what everyone does, everyone is a gambler.
Oh, yeah.
And that's very sad, because this should be a business.
So
and if you treat it like a business, you can make very consistent 10 to 20% returns every single year if you treat this like a business. But if you treat it like gambling, you're going to perform about as well as you do in a casino.
Because you'll just do silly things.
And that's the difference between the guy who's a billionaire who owns a casino and the suckers who walk in the door of a casino. The suckers who walk in the door of a casino think they're going to be a billionaire by gambling, and the guy who's actually a billionaire makes a penny here and a penny there and a penny there a million times a day.
Oh.
And he knows how to make money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No, he doesn't. That guy is not sitting there betting a $500 million on black and hoping to be a billionaire. That guy's making a half or a quarter of a percent on the rolls on his table.
Yeah.
And he just wants people to play. As long as they play, he'll statistically get his money. And that's how this works.
If you have a question about the market and you'd like to ask Phil of philstockworld.com a question, come on in, 888-663-6386, as we're live here this morning, July 21st, 2010, and emails patrick@1radionetwork.com. I came across Phil's Stock World because another website I visit from time to time led me there, and he's got some interesting things all about the economy in Europe and how this thing all works, and we're going to get to that. But this whole option thing is, it almost sounds too good to be true, though. I mean, it almost sounds like, isn't there any risk in doing this? There's got to be some risk.
There's no more risk than the risk you take owning Bank America for 6 months.
There's no more risk. Ah, so if Bank America goes down, then what happens?
If it goes down, you keep the money, and you have the stock at the lower price.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. So there's no more risk, like you say, than just buying Bank of America.
That's right. There's absolutely less risk, and this is what I'm saying. Think about every stock you've ever bought, and think about lowering the price of the stock by 10% the minute you buy it. Every stock you ever bought, a 10% discount. And 6 months later, you get another 10% discount. And 6 months later, you get another 10%.
Now, explain that. Why does it roll over like that, Phil?
Because when the option expires,
mm-hmm.
you get to sell another one to the next sucker.
So you take another option, and you just go up another dollar from where it is or something?
That's correct. There's several things. You know, there's more advanced stuff than that, because what if Bank America is at 1447? And the guy gets, I can give him his 47 cents and make him go away. Remember, I collect $1.50.
Yeah.
So if it goes to 14.47, he could buy me out at 14. I could get rid of him by paying him back 47 cents, though. That's what his contract is worth. I don't have to take the $14 for Bank of America. I can buy back his contract.
So it's all math.
It's all math. But the bottom line is, everybody goes, options scary. I tell people I do options, I go, oh my God, that's hard stuff. Or everybody loses when they do options.
Right.
Yes, everybody loses when they do options. That's why you sell them.
That's why you don't buy them.
Yeah.
Now you see, yeah. So then I suspect then you do a lot of this stuff a lot of times on stocks that you like that you think are going to be relatively stable. Is that a fair assessment? No. Okay.
You know, I look, if you want to talk a basic strategy, yes, you want to pick very stable stocks and do this. There's no such thing as a stable stock in this market. Once you get good at selling, you can take advantage of all kinds of situations. Like this morning when Apple went flying up, we sell Apple calls because we have two rules. We have two rules on Phil Stock World. And rule number one is always, capital always, sell into the initial excitement.
Okay, explain that to us novices.
In other words, when people are excited about a stock, when it's ramping up, when it's flying up.
Like Apple's new iBook or something.
Like today, Apple had earnings. They had really good earnings.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter they had good earnings. Doesn't matter that we love Apple. But the people who have the Apple stock, the time to sell the options was this morning when it was ramping up in earnings. Because you know what happens? A bunch of people run into the casino and start buying crazy options at high prices. They're bidding on these things.
Oh.
And so they start paying $5 for the Apple 300 calls for August. $5 for Apple to go to 300 in August.
And what is it today?
Fell now. Now it's back to 259.
So you sold some Apple calls this morning?
Yeah.
And then there are people out there who hear on the news that Apple stock earnings were good and blah, blah, blah. So they run to their little computer and they start buying options to buy it.
Right.
Why don't they just buy this?
There's a sex appeal to buying options, but just like there's a sex appeal to betting a number's going to come up in roulette and pay you 35-1.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're leveraging that, you know, that bet on Apple. Okay, I buy a $5 call on Apple for $300 in August, right? If Apple, now I'm paying $5 to control a $250 share of Apple stock.
Right.
If Apple actually does go up 10-15% and goes to 320, I make $15 on my $5.
Okay, I'm following.
All right, so yeah. I'm buying it at my 300 strike price.
Mm-hmm.
My option contract expires worthless, but I got my $20 spread on Apple. I get to buy it at 300 when it's really at 320.
Very interesting.
But do you see the insanity of the bet, though?
Yeah.
I'm betting a stock 10% out of the money and paying $5 for it to be 10%, you know, for it to be 10% higher than it is now in a month.
That doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense.
But people do it.
Oh my God, the people do.
And because people do it, you can be the, you said, well, these are crazy bets. I might as well be the casino and let them do the bet.
That's right. Be the house. That's what we teach people. Be the house.
It's pretty wild. 19 minutes after the hour with Phil Stockworld, Phil Davis, and my number is 888-663-6386. So, but can someone do this after they learn from you on how at PhilStockworld.com? Can they do this and still have a real job, or do they have to sit around in their underwear on their computer all day?
No, it's
eating ding-dongs, you know, that's the image you get of day traders.
I have plenty of people who are, I don't know what they're wearing, but but they're online all day long.
Well, I bet they are.
I've got guys who are day trading, making, you know, crazy money and crazy bets day trading. We have, and we do, by the way, we do indulge in buying options once in a while. We buy them sometimes too, but there's reasons we buy them, you know, for leverage, for hedging, for spreads. You know, we teach people how to hedge their portfolios. But as far as selling options, as far as this, I want, you know, again, it's there's a whole world of strategies out there.
Oh, I bet there is.
But the basic concept I want to get across to the average person who would be listening to this right now is if you buy stock and you don't sell options against the stock, you are leaving huge amounts of money on the table. You're just not, it's like buying a vacation home and not renting it out when you're not there.
Oh, my God.
It's just empty. It's money that could be going in your pocket that's not. So unless you can afford the empty vacation home, unless you're so rich that you don't care, you're foolish not to be doing the rentals.
Mm-hmm. Of course, for most of us, you know, us working stiffs, you know, buying 100 shares of a stock at $50, you know, it's a lot of money.
Don't buy those stocks.
Oh.
Bank America's $13.
Oh, I see. So it's only $1,000.
It's what you can afford.
Yeah. But do you have to buy 100 shares, 100 blocks?
Yes.
Okay, you do.
You must have 100 shares of stock to sell a contract against.
Okay.
Here, I'll tell you one of my favorites. MEMC Electronics, whose symbol is WFR.
WFR.
They're selling for $10.66. They make solar chips.
Oh, we like those.
Yes, we love solar chips.
Mm-hmm.
You buy the stock for $10, and let's say $10.70.
Mm-hmm.
You can sell a 2012, January 2012, $10 call for $3.
What? Come on now. That
I am not joking.
Now, why? Whoa, wait a minute. That's 2 years from now.
18 months.
18 months, and you're still in great shape if it's in the $10 range?
No, not the $10 range. Let's do the math.
Okay.
You're buying it for $10.70.
Okay.
You're selling the January 2012 call
mm-hmm.
for $3.
Right.
So what's your transaction going to look like? You're buying 100 shares for $1,000, $1,070.
Right. And then you're
selling a call for $300.
Right.
What's your net outlay?
$770. Mm-hmm.
What is your, so your break even is $770, the stock is at $1070. So your break even is now 30% lower than the current price. That's free insurance. That's a side benefit to being in the house, free insurance. On the stock that you wanted to buy anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, so now you've got a 30% discount that you own it. So if it drops, the market drops 30%, the stock drops 30%, you are even.
You're still even.
Not only that, but you laid out less money to buy the stock you wanted. All right?
Yeah.
If the stock holds $10 for 18 months, if it goes higher, it goes higher. You're not going to benefit from anything higher than $10. You don't care. You just care that it holds $10. So basically, if the stock drops less than 10% in the next 18 months, you will get a profit. You'll get paid another $10 for the man to take the stock away from you. All right? That is a 33% profit in 18 months.
Hmm. What if nobody buys the call? Phil?
No such thing.
Oh, they do buy.
Yeah.
No. No such thing?
No.
There's always buyers.
Yeah. There's always buyers at a price. You need to look at these. We teach people how to look at the option screens. There's an option trading screen, and you'll see what's being offered.
Oh, I see.
There's bids and asks on all the options.
Well, Phil Davis, why in the world would somebody like Patrick Timpone, here are our listeners, run out and buy a 2012 WFR option for $3 each today? Why would I do that? A 1070? I mean, that seems stupid. I don't know anything, and that seems stupid.
That's why it's my favorite stock pick, right?
Because people will do it.
Well, okay, here, I'll tell you why. All right, conceptually, I'll tell you why. I mean, this price happens to be idiotic.
Yeah.
In a million years, I would shoot any of my members who paid this money.
Yeah.
I would actually track them down and execute them. That's how strongly I feel about this.
I can tell.
But the reason somebody theoretically would pay this is because it's leverage. Because let's say that you strongly feel that Obama is going to pass another stimulus package, and that stimulus package is going to have a very heavy solar component in it.
And the
MEMC is extremely underpriced as it is, and I feel all these things.
That's what you're kind of thinking. This is going to happen.
Yes, I believe all these things are going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I would not be surprised if MEMC is at $20 in 2012, but that doesn't mean I should take the risk of it going to 20. But another person may say, okay, so I can buy three times more. Your leverage is you're buying three times more stock than you could afford right now. That's your leverage of buying the option. You're only paying, you're quote only paying $3.
I got you.
To control an $11 stock.
Mm-hmm.
So that person can say, I think MEMC is going to 20, and if I spend $11 for my shares, I control 100 shares, and I'll make $1,000 if it goes to 20. But if I buy four option contracts for $1,200 or for whatever it works out to, for about four, you know, if I spend the same money basically on four option contracts, I make $4,000 when it goes to 20.
So this fellow who's going to buy these things, if he believes, as you do, that the stimulus, another one, will come up and solar will be a component, it'll be a good deal for him as well, I mean, if he's right.
Yes, yeah. But again, like I said, this is an extreme example, which is, by the way, when I say it's my favorite, I mean, we look at 2,000, 5,000 different options and find the best ones for our members. When this is an idiotic example, but let's take a better one. I'll take SunPower, SPWRA, another great solar chip company.
When you say solar chips, just give us an idea. I'm curious about what that means.
Well, MEMC makes the chips for the solar cells, for the arrays and all that. They make the silicone chips that go inside all these things and control it and make them work.
Right.
SunPower actually makes the actual panels and things like that, but they also, you know, they're also on that end of it. They're not installers. Let's say we separate it that way.
Well, you know, when you start doing this kind of research and analysis, it takes you out of the pure Humphrey Bogart, hello, sweetheart, gambling thing, right? Because you're actually doing some investing, aren't you? I mean,
of course. I'm a fundamental analyst. We use options to lower the cost of the stocks that we want to buy.
Yeah. Oh, so
but
you're buying the fundamental stocks.
We're not randomly picking, you know, we're not going to randomly pick stocks
right.
by GM.
Oh, so you're our fundamental guy on the other end, where you're going to try to buy things that you believe is going to go up for the reasons you just talked about.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's why sometimes things are so tempting that we'll buy them anyway. Oh, here's another fun trick.
Okay.
I'll tell you. Let's go back to Wafer, MEMC, WFR.
WFR, the 1099.
Yeah, we call them Wafer because of the symbol.
Mm-hmm.
And also reminds you that's what they sell. Here's an interesting thing that you can do. This is a little more advanced. The $10 put is the opposite side of a call. If you sell a put, you are obligating yourself to buy the stock for the price that you sell the put at.
Okay, so a put is like saying you think it's going to go down.
That's right. You're saying it's going to go up if you sell a put.
Oh, if you sell a put.
Yes, if you buy a put, yeah, you think it's going to go down.
Right.
So the $10 put on SunPower is $2. On WFR, sorry, is $2. So you don't even have to buy the stock. You can just sell the put and collect $200.
And when you sell the put, what exactly are you doing?
Now you've created, what you've done is you've collected $200 from a seller.
Okay.
And what you've done is you've obligated yourself to buy the stock for $10 in January of 2012.
Oh, okay. So you're really betting that this baby is not going to go down.
You're betting it's not going to go down.
Mm-hmm.
But rather than paying anything for the stock right now, you're going to collect money and promise to buy it for $10 in a year and a half.
Mm-hmm. What happens in a year and a half if you have to buy it for $10 and you don't have the money?
Then you're in trouble.
Yeah. That's when Uncle Vito comes.
Your broker will be calling you and send some guys over to collect.
That's when Uncle Vito comes over to break your legs.
Yeah, that's not a good thing. No, and by the way, you can't trade options if you don't have a certain level of money. Usually, brokers want to see like a $25,000 in your account at least, and then you've got to clear a couple of hurdles as far as you can't just wake up tomorrow and say, I'm an option trader.
Mm-hmm. No matter what
if you have no relationship with your broker and you don't usually trade in this, you know, it's you have to establish yourself first before you can just jump in and start trading derivatives effectively.
No matter what kind of underwear you have, you just got to have the money.
Yeah. Yes, if my guys are in their underwear, I guarantee you it's expensive underwear.
All right, stay right there. Can you hang on a second?
Sure.
Okay, philstockworld.com. You know, I think it's good that we all just get a really kind of general idea of how all this stuff goes on, because maybe at some point you want to do these kind of things. I mean, or not, but at least you can learn a little bit more here, because the world of money is a curious one indeed. My name is Patrick Timpone. And this is OneRadioNetwork.com. We're going to have open phones after we finish up with Phil. So stay right here. And 888-663-6386. And speaking of money,
if you're an investor, you may be considering the future value of paper money. So as an investor, what do you believe? Will your paper dollar buy more in the future? Or do you believe, like most, that it will potentially buy dramatically less? If so, how does one go about protecting the buying power of their wealth? USGoldCoins.com, a premier gold and silver coin company, is providing wealth protection for investors in the form of gold and silver United States coins. Please call us at 1-800-878-2646 for free information on how you too can learn to acquire gold and silver United States coins. It is the best way to protect your wealth in the current economic environment. 1-800-878-2646, usgoldcoins.com.
And that company you may know is owned by our own Andrew Goss. He'll be here every Saturday between 6 and 8 o'clock, 800-468-2646. All of our sponsors on the front page are the best products that we know. And this is not just something we just make up and say, oh, these are great products. They truly are products that I have looked into. Every one of these I use myself. The Rebonder I've had for 15 years. Sithrival, the Immortal Dill Deer Velvet Antler. Boy, if you want to raise your testosterone and get rid of the extra estrogen, this is the easiest way to do it. The Bio-Ray, Natural Solutions for Modern Pollution. Really cool stuff that you can take each day. The only ones I can't vouch for all the products is the Renewal Enterprises. And one of the reasons we hooked up with them is because they have a really nice, large array of different products that we do like. But I can't tell you that I've used all the products that they sell, because they sell thousands. So that's a caveat to what I've just said. But one of the things we like on Renewal Life is the Intramax. Drucker Labs invented it, and we've interviewed Professor Drucker. Cool stuff. The liquid vitamins that we really like. Very, very absorbable. And then the silver hydrosol, one of the best silvers ever, the Ormolite clay, and from pyroclay, and then, of course, Michael Payne, and the Zyto, and the Nutraphysical that you can get tested right in your home, and it's really a neat thing. All these are on the front page, and we make a little commission when you click through on our site, and that helps us become sustainable. And what a concept. All on OneRadioNetwork.com.
Know the source. One Radio Network. Talk to Patrick now. 888-663-6386. Or email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, we're eating ding-dongs and Fritos and our underwear day trading with, just kidding, Phil's StockWorld.com. Phil Davis. Phil, if somebody wants to kind of do what you do and you teach them, what does it cost? How does it work?
Well, we're actually going to be rolling out a different form of membership in the fall. So it'll be a little bit, there'll be some less expensive entry points. But right now we have a newsletter, and that newsletter is $29 a month. So
uh-huh.
That's the easiest way to do it.
Yeah.
And that will be going up in price in the next month, actually. But we're going to be putting more stuff into it, is the difference. And then there are basic and premium memberships. Now, basic memberships are $149 a month, and our premium memberships are $249 a month.
But that's where you have your engaged with your subscribers for that kind of money?
There's a lot of articles and educational posts and strategy posts and all sorts of things. There's several people on our site who put up different option plays, stock picks, trading ideas, so on and so forth. And then there's a few of us who are actually online during the day, talking to our members.
Hmm. Now, so one can theorize.
Up, we elaborate and answer specific questions.
Right. I guess one can visualize and almost salivate a bit at the possibility of staying home and making a living with your family on your computer. But just to be realistic with us, if somebody had the seed money to start and they're really interested in these kinds of things, On a 1 to 10, with 10 being the most risky, how risky would it be for a intelligent guy or girl who understands math and that? I mean, can you give us an idea of how risky a move that would be for a lifestyle thing, or would you actually encourage somebody to get in little by little by little by little?
Well, on a scale of 1 to 10,
yeah.
For someone to try to make a living trading,
yeah.
I'd go with about 14.
14?
Yeah.
Wow. So this is not something you just want to sell the cars.
No, I spend a lot of time talking people out of, trying to day trade for a living.
It's just not, you got to really.
Day trading especially. I mean, we're not day traders.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about 6-month options, 18-month options. I'm talking about something the average person. And again, I'm not telling anyone to take their money out of the bank and go and start buying stocks and selling options. If you already buy stocks as a sound investment strategy, and you've already have an accountant or an investment advisor who's already said, I think you should put X amount of your portfolio into stock,
mm-hmm.
then I'm telling you that you are a fool not to sell options against your stocks.
Well,
because you are just leaving money on the table. That people are willing to pay to rent your stock.
If what you've told us was accurate, and I can only trust you at this point, I don't know you, but in the last 40 minutes, even an untrained brain would tend to have to agree with what you've told us. I mean, it doesn't seem like much of a real risk there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I also tell other people, and let's take a typical example. I mean, people come to me and say, Phil, I have $100,000. I want to make $25,000, $30,000 a year trading. All right? And I will tell them, you are a fool.
It's not that easy.
It's not that easy. Look what just happened 2 years ago. You'd have $30,000. Doesn't matter if you sold options or did something else. You're just not going to make
sure, because that's how much was taken out of the market.
Yeah.
So that's really where I'd like to go here before, for the rest of the little time we're going to spend here with you this morning, is most of these stock trades are through really huge industrial kind of corporate, isn't it, like mutual funds and the big boys, the Goldmans and the JPs, and they're making the market move up and down, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Well, then, how do you play in a rigged game kind of like that? I mean, isn't it crazy? It's like going to the track and people are giving their horses drugs?
Yeah.
Yeah, he says.
I'm not arguing that.
Okay, you know that.
I'm telling they're the house.
Ah.
I'm telling you to be the house.
Be the house.
Don't fight the power.
Because the boys got a lot of money.
They got a lot of money. They've got a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to look at the trends. And by the way, what we do, again, it's not this, there's not some automatic blah, 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 just buy any stock and sell any option. Doesn't work like that. You pick stocks that are fundamentally sound. And this is, by the way, we were buying like crazy last week when the market was dipping, because I was like, this is too low, let's buy some stock, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So we bought a lot of things last week. In March of 2009, when the market was crashing, I was screaming, buy, 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 buy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In fact, it was on TV. It was funny. It was on TV on March 6th when the market was completely collapsing, and I was just insane. I mean, I picked 15 different stocks, and I was telling people, hey, you have to buy this option, you have to buy that option. I told people, I'm like, the prices were just ridiculously low.
Uh-huh.
And at a certain point, you have to look at the fundamentals, and you have to say, I don't care what somebody thinks GE is worth. I don't care if the stock price of GE is $10 or $20 or $50 or $5. The bottom line is GE makes a certain amount of money every year. And that money covers, what they make is a P.E. ratio of 10.
Which is not good.
What? No, 10 is good.
Oh, 10 is good?
10, a P.E. of 10, price
oh, price,
ratio,
price earnings ratio.
It means they're going to make back the money you give them in 10 years. That's all it is. It's very simple.
Is that what a P.E. ratio is?
Yes, it means the price of the stock
mm-hmm.
compared to the earnings. So this year they earn $1 for every $10 of the stock price. That's what a 10 P.E. is. None of this is complicated. Again, this is the thing we try to tell people. It's like, stocks are not complicated. Everybody makes it sound like voodoo. It's a very simple concept. Does a company make enough money to be worthwhile? Then you look at the survivability of GE. And again, GE is them. GE is one of those guys who control the universe.
Yeah, they're like one of the big boys.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter if GE's stock price goes down. It was like $5 when we were buying it. It's like I have about 15 now. But it was $5. And it's like, you know, it's GE. They've been around for 150 years. They're not going to go away tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, I'm wondering about even like someone like Goldman Sachs, who are one of the primary owners of the New York Federal Reserve Bank. These boys in the long haul are not going to lose money, are they?
No.
No. How could they?
Not going to lose money.
I mean,
if they
lose
money, they'll make you give them more. What's the difference?
It's like, sure.
They can't lose money because as soon as they lose money, they put their hand out to the government and say, "You pay us, or everyone dies."
And plus, that's, they make money and then they lend it to the you know, they buy treasury bonds or whatever, you know.
It's way worse than that. I mean, what's going on in the financial?
Oh man, let's get to that a little bit. So it's interesting that you understand that it's a rigged game. You understand by reading some of your stuff on PhilStockWorld.com that there are the powers that be and the boys that you just alluded to, but you're comfortable in there digging around because you're clever enough to be the house and be kind of, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about a rigged game, okay? You ever see the game where they got the three cards and one of them is a red queen and you got to find the red queen?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's called Three Card Monty. I don't know how many people know that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so obviously the guy never finds the red queen. It seems like it seems so easy, and the guy moves the cards around, but the guy playing never picks the right card because it's a con.
Never.
Okay? So what are we doing? We're not the con men. We're the guy standing on the side making a bet that says he's not going to find the red queen. Watch. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know it's a rigged game. I know what the outcome's going to be. We observe the behavior, and we say, this is what's going to happen next. Okay, these suckers are going to bet on the card. He's going to pick that card, and he's going to be wrong. So we're going to bet that he'll be wrong. And by the way, I know a lot of people play, a lot of people like playing the rigged game and don't ever say anything because they love playing the rigged game, and they think that's great. I constantly call people out on the rigged game. I mean, I read a lot of articles about how evil these bastards are, but that doesn't mean I'm still not going to bet on them until somebody makes them stop.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all we're doing. We're betting on the rigged game. Yeah. I love that the game is rigged from a betting perspective because I know what's going to happen.
And also, Phil, I think people can make the argument when it comes to government involvement, it's pretty easy to predict what these guys are going to do. I mean, they don't change their stripes very often.
No, well, I mean, yeah, they're
what I mean.
The same. In other words, boss, same as the old boss kind of thing.
Yeah, they're John Maynard Keynes people. They're gonna continue to inflate. They're not gonna go the other way.
Not likely. I mean, a lot of pressure from Europe for us to tighten our belts.
Yeah, but
Well, no, we're not. We don't control the world anymore. We are the third class citizen in the world at the moment.
Hmm. So you think the Germans have that much influence and people saying, "Come on, get this austerity thing going" and all that?
Yeah.
Do you?
I don't think that we'll end up buckling ultimately because Americans can't take it.
Yeah, right.
We can't cut back. We can't we can't do what our grandparents did in the Depression. Can't do it.
We're just not wired like that, are we?
We're not wired for it.
Yeah.
I mean, just anybody listening right now, how many of you actually go around your house turning off the lights?
I do. But I have solar panels on my roof too.
Yeah, well, you're very conscious of that sort of thing. But I'm saying you have to realize it's we're in a recession. People are worried about money, but they still can't be bothered to shut the damn light off when they leave a room. I mean, that's crazy.
Or pay $10 for a coffee at Starbucks or something.
Yeah, well, that's different. I mean, that's a pleasure thing.
That's a necessity. What are you going to say, right? With that,
yeah.
Especially if you're a trader. 888-663-6386. So let me get you. Can we talk a little just politics, global financial stuff?
Sure, I love that.
Yeah, and from your perspective, what do you make of this whole European thing? And now the euro's going back up, and possible there's this talk of maybe Germany's going to drop out of the breakup, the EU, and all of this stuff. How does this affect us humans who use dollars, trade dollars back and forth? What is your perspective on the concerns about what's going on in Europe? Any at all?
Well, Germany will not break up the EU. Germany will do whatever it takes to keep the EU together because Germany is a strong economy because they are the strongest exporter in the EU. It's all to their benefit.
So they
Why would they break it up when they are the ones that are selling goods all over the place?
Of course, they make good stuff that people want.
Yes, Germany has something called quality.
Yeah.
Something America hasn't had in 20 years.
Yeah.
And we've completely ceded all concepts of quality to foreign countries.
Yes.
And unfortunately, that leaves... And why is that? Because we downgrade and downgrade and downgrade until the factories could send their stuff off to China. And we used to... Remember when Made in Japan used to be a joke?
Yeah, right.
You know, this, we're talking 20 years ago. One generation ago, something made in Japan was considered junk compared to something American. Now, Made in Japan is quality. Made in Germany is the best of the best.
Hmm.
Okay? Which way did we go? Made in America is now the joke. Made in America doesn't even exist anymore.
So,
America is really made in China.
Is that issue to free trade and all that stuff?
It's all about profit and greed.
Yeah.
It's all about the American worker being sold down the road so corporations could make more profits. That the bottom line is they don't care about you. Multinational corporations are going to look at the multinational marketplace of labor and put their business wherever the cheapest labor is. They're going to sell to any sucker who wants to buy.
But then the politicians, they were pushing the whole free trade, so the corporations and the politicians have dinner together.
That's right. I mean, look. There's nothing theoretically wrong with free trade. What's wrong is the outsourcing of labor is not the same thing as free trade. We're not making it here. In other words, we were sold a bill of goods that free trade would be great for American manufacturing. All it did was allow the American manufacturers to leave America and stop manufacturing in America so they could freely trade from China to here.
Or Mexico or wherever.
The only freeness that came about free trade was the freedom from taxes for these large corporations.
Hmm. So they're the only people that benefit. So do you see any, Phil Davis, do you see any turnaround of this? How are we going to come out of this, whatever this thing is, this great recession? Are we going to come out of it or just slowly dilute the value of the dollar?
Are we going to slowly dilute the value of the dollar?
In other words,
I know what you're saying. I'm just trying to think if that's a realistic term because you have to look at the, what would you call it? It's the mass. Let's call it the mass of dollars in the world.
About, what, 18 trillion or something?
Yeah. Well, it's not a matter of it being 18 trillion. It's a matter of it being, I would say, 60% or 70% of all the currency in the world is U.S. dollars.
I think it's even more than that. But
okay,
I may be wrong. I think it's up to 90.
Okay. Well, now, also, who has dollars? The richest people in the world have the most dollars.
Right.
Okay. China has dollars.
They've
got 1.5 trillion of them.
Right.
Europe's got dollars. They've got a trillion something of them. They've, you know, technically we owe them, but that's beside the point. So do you think that the richest people in the world who have all their holdings in dollars, you know, the vast majority of their holdings are in dollars, and the European countries that we owe money to and China that we owe money to, do you think, and Japan we owe a trillion to also, do you think that they want the dollar to devalue?
No.
So, you know, it's not rational to think that the dollar is going to collapse. It's already collapsed.
Well,
that's not the point. They've already bought their dollars. The dollar's already down, like, you know, more than half in the last 10 years.
Well, we agree with you because we've been taught by Andrew Goss, who our weekly guest is, it's not going to crash. He says there's no profit in a crash. Why would they allow it to crash?
Exactly.
What's the problem? You know, he argues that if they would let it crash, they could have done it with, Lehman or Bear Stearns or 9/11.
That's right. They could, yes, anybody, it would have been so easy to push us over the edge.
Yeah, just say, okay, you know, we lost $100 billion in the World Trade Center, so we're done.
If China, just China, wants to crash the dollar tomorrow,
they could.
All they have to do is say, we're buying gold, or they would do it after the fact. If you want to do it intelligently, China could just say, we just bought $500 billion worth of gold, and we bought $500 billion worth of oil from Saudi Arabia as a long-term contract. And we're diversifying the rest of our dollar holdings out. That would be the end of the dollar right there. But, it would be over.
Yeah, but they have no. There's no upside for them for
no. They could do that. A Chinese official could do that by signing a piece of paper, and it'd be done in a month.
Right.
Okay. It's not. There's a reason it doesn't happen. Okay. Nobody can afford to let it happen. Nobody can print money. They can't print money fast enough to cover the dollar. The euro can't grow fast enough to take over the dollar. The yen is not no chance at all, obviously. And the Chinese yuan. I mean, they have to increase. They have to create 100-200 times more currency than they currently have in order to match the dollar as a reserve currency. Now imagine that. Imagine the incredible inflationary event they'd have to go through in order to get to just to create that much money.
Yes.
You know, it took Europe 15 years to get the euro going and another 10 years to stabilize it, and it's still hardly stable.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to erase the dollar next year or 5 years?
No,
it's never going to happen.
Well, we agree because we've been taught over the years with Andrew that there is, you know, people arguing about this one world currency, getting their panties in a wad. He said, we have a one world currency. It's a dollar.
That's right.
He said, come on, one world government? He said, you know, they've been in control for, what, 150 years?
Right? Uh-huh.
He said, you guys are predicting the past. Well, okay, so let's talk a bit about, before we get out here at the top of the hour, you told me yesterday you took a look at our site and you saw, I guess, some advertisers for gold, that you are not a gold bug. How can you argue, though, against, say, gold's going up about, what, 15% per year over the last 10 years? That's pretty good gains.
It's barely keeping up with real inflation. Oil's gone up a lot more than gold has.
Yeah, I guess real inflation is about 15%.
Mm-hmm.
But then you haven't lost any money either.
It doesn't inherently have a value. But again, your gains are based on speculation. 90% of the people who hold gold hold it as a speculative commodity. They're not using it. Nobody's exchanging it. You know, what do gold bugs dream about? Gold bugs dream about the currency collapsing, the banks failing, America falling apart, the world governments falling apart, fires burning in the cities, and they've got their gold is worth $5,000. Okay? They better be investing in guns and ammo.
Yeah.
Not gold.
We agree because, you know, we call them collapsitarians around here, and we're not supportive of that ideal. However, if one argues that the dollar will continue to lose 15% per year with the way they print money and lend it to the USG, that's a good reason to buy and hold precious metals.
A demand.
It's a hedge against
inflation.
It's a
reason to buy and hold copper. It's a reason to buy and hold even aluminum or silver. Gold is not used.
Because you like silver and platinum because they use it in the medical. And
yeah, gold is used for jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
And gold is used by speculators. But what else is gold used by? I mean, occasionally in electronics they like to use gold, but once it hits at this price, they don't use it anymore because it's not worth it. It's not that good of a conductor that they want to use it because it's too damn expensive.
Do you think that the percentage upside, as many do, is bigger for silver than gold?
No. Silver's not really primarily a demand metal. Copper is the best. If you really want to take a serious inflation hedge, copper is needed. As much copper as they mine is pretty much used every year.
But isn't silver used in electronics and also health now, too?
Silver has its uses, but again, it's not primarily an industrial use. If most people buying something is speculative, if most people buying it are hoarding something, it's not a good long-term hedge.
How do you invest in copper? I mean, I know that...
Freeport McNamara, FCX.
What is it?
Freeport McNamara, the biggest copper miner, FCX.
What are the numbers and letters again?
FCX.
Oh, Frank, Charlie...
Xavier.
Oh, Xavier. F.C. Freeport McNamara.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they're around this area, aren't they? East Texas or
yeah.
Louisiana?
They're a good copper company, and they export and all that. So if the dollar's weak, they make more money because they collect it abroad.
Mm-hmm. What are they selling for now?
I don't know. We bought them last week, but they went shooting up now. You know, we love guys when they get cheap, and that's what we do.
FCX, Freeport McNamara.
They're at 66.68 now. 62.50 was our buy point. So they're 66.66. That's a nice satanic number to buy at.
Yeah, 6666. why did they go up so much in last week? Do you know?
Copper shot back up. Because again, copper went down to a silly low price, and we decided it was too low. Mm-hmm. And in fact, copper at $3 is there's a good tip for your viewers. Watching copper at the $3 line is one of the best indicators of whether the market's going to go up or down.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So if you watch the copper prices,
mm-hmm.
and then you just kind of look at, what do you mean, like use $3 as your kind of base point?
Yeah, $3. In other words, if copper's above $3, it means there's demand and the economy, somewhere in the world, the economy is going.
Huh, be done.
If you look at the global economy, because $3 is a lot of money for copper, frankly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that means there's robust growth somewhere. People are demanding it because nobody's hoarding copper.
Yeah, it's not like you put copper in your underwear drawer or anything like that.
Okay. Nobody's stockpiling copper and holding copper. Although China actually, frankly, stockpiles copper, but they stockpile it because they need it.
Well,
China's got to give electricity still to a billion people.
Amazing. Well, that leads right into this one email. This is from Jerry. He is in Canada, and I'm enjoying the show, and I've never realized what options were really about. I'll check out Phil's website. And I'll plug it again for you, Phil, philstockworld.com. And he wants to know what Phil's theory, philosophy, and long-range outlook for China. Many people say that they are inflating too quickly and they're just going to bust out here someday. Do you agree?
No. I think you would. If you could have said that about the United States in 1800.
Mm.
Right? You would have said, oh, look at this ridiculous growth in this country. They just had a revolution, and now they're expanding out west and putting out...
They're going out to California.
Yeah. ...laying railroads and blah, 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 you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
China is literally 100 years behind us in development.
100 years?
What are they doing now? They're giving electricity to people for the first time. They're putting in phone service. They're laying railroad tracks and highways.
Wow,
don't have cars. People are walking around. If you want to say an average Chinese, there's nothing to do with an average Chinese, but there's probably 500 million, 600 million Chinese people who've never been in a car.
Really? Boy, if they could cure or really solve the whole pollution thing, they'd really get something going over there. But
yeah, well, that's unfortunately a bad global situation.
Yeah.
But that's what America should be doing.
What's that?
Solar. We should be spending $1 trillion to take the world lead on solar energy, and we should be exporting that stuff because we solve the problems for China. We solve the problems for India. We solve developing nations' problems because solar, you know this because you use it, solar is a distributed energy source. You don't have to have an infrastructure built up to give people solar power.
Yes.
You know, you can just go to one town and take 10 acres of their fields and put solar panels out, and the whole town has power for free.
Yep.
This is not a complicated concept.
Not complicated.
And it's right there in our grasp. You use it in your own home,
mm-hmm.
and it's just something anybody could do anywhere in the world, and it makes sense.
I talked to a fellow yesterday. He's very creative, a carpenter and builder, and he's looking at building panels at home in his shop for $200
mm-hmm.
that he can sell for $500.
Yeah, well, good.
That's pretty cool, isn't it?
That's not only cool, but that's another thing I've been working on. I've got one of my members runs homeless shelters in the cities, and we're talking about putting these people to work and creating businesses like your friend, like doing entrepreneurial ventures with unemployed people, because we've got an army of skilled unemployed people sitting around, and just because corporate America doesn't want to pay them, we could start our own damn corporations.
What do you mean we could start our own corporation? Well, how does that work? What do you mean?
How does that work? See, I mean, I don't want to bust your chops.
No, that's all right. Go ahead.
That's what's wrong with this country. Is you basically just said to me, how does capitalism work?
Oh, I see. So you're just talking about getting a group of people together, build a thing, and put people to work.
Yeah. I'm saying the corporations in America are recording right now, this month, are reporting record profits. The most profits ever made by U.S. corporations in a single quarter are being reported right now.
And they're just sitting on it.
It's not just that they're sitting on it. That's our money.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, those 25 million unemployed people, that's the corporate profits that they're reporting. They said, we've fired all these bums.
Oh.
We don't need them. We're hiring Chinese people for $1 a day, and these guys can go rot. Well, that's not how it works, because in real capitalism, those 25 million unemployed people start their own companies, work for less money than the fat cat corporations, take their profits, and they're employed, and the big guys are out.
Mm-hmm.
That's how capitalism is supposed to work.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we don't have capitalism in this country. We have what we call corporate kleptocracy.
Kleptocracy?
Klept, as in kleptomaniac.
Oh, kleptocracy.
And that just means corporations, the top, what I call the top 0.1%. It's, mm-hmm. it's 30,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
There's 30,000 people in corporations in this country who have more than one-third of all the money. That's how concentrated wealth is in this country. There's 30,000 people who have one-third of the money in the United States and have one-third of the assets in the United States, and they control everything.
Can you stay a few more minutes?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, it's fun talking to you. Hold on a second. I just want to do a quick break, and then we're going to do it.
Nothing is more expensive than bad information. Know the source. OneRadioNetwork.com. Talk to Patrick now, 888-663-6386, or email patrick@oneradionetwork.com.
I think we're having an interesting conversation with Phil Davis, philstockworld.com. You can go on there and sign up for a newsletter. We'll also teach you how to do the options. If you just tuned us, this is very interesting where you can listen to the first hour on the podcast, and he'll make a pretty good argument why selling options may be a very clever way to buy some stock. But I want to get back to this a second. I was thinking, Phil, what if in the $700 billion bailout that the USG, as much as I don't like government doing these kind of things, but what if they just went into like 50 cities around the country and built a solar plant or something and put people to work? I mean, that'd be...
Again, yeah, well, you're right. I mean, yes. I wrote this up in... I had two solutions to fix the entire economy that I wrote in 2006.
Okay.
And I've subsequently repeated them, and my people have sent them to Congress, and we've talked to people about it and so on and so forth. There's no will to get anything done.
No.
All right? We have spent, as of today, we spent $3.7 trillion bailing out the banks. Okay? That works out to about $30,000 for every single taxpayer. That's how much money we've given to the banks since the crisis began.
$30,000 per
person. So anybody listening now, if you file a tax return, $30,000 came out of you. All right, and if you didn't pay $30,000, you owe it.
But
that bill's still coming because the government's going to get that money one way or the other back.
So what'd you say? We'll just send everybody $30,000 and spend it?
Well, this is interesting. Now, here's my plan to fix the housing crisis tomorrow. Completely solve it. Instead of giving $3.7 trillion to the banks, all the government does is make a one-page form, and they give it to every bank in America that anybody can go down to the bank and fill out this form. And what does the form say? I promise, or I'm transferring $125,000 of my home's value to the government in exchange for $100,000 being taken off my mortgage.
Can I say that again? I'm going to take... Do the what?
I, the homeowner,
right,
am promising $125,000 of my home's value.
The equity I have in my home.
Up to half of the equity in your home.
Mm-hmm.
Not the equity, the of the value of your home.
Oh, because a lot of people don't have equity.
Right.
Okay.
It's not about equity.
Just the value.
So up to half of your home's value, up to $100,000, that you transfer to the government, $125,000 of your home's value, and they give you, and they immediately, automatically, give the bank $100,000 in exchange for that contract. And you don't have to pay them until you sell your home.
Okay. So if somebody has a home that's only worth $75,000, they can do half of that.
They could sell $35,000 or so, yeah.
And so you say, okay, so I'm going to sign a note. Say if my home is worth $300,000, I would sign a note saying up to $125,000?
Correct. Okay. No, up to $100,000, but you're giving the government a 25% bonus.
I'm going to give them...
In other words, on the sale of your home, you will owe them $125,000.
Yeah.
And they will take $100,000 off your mortgage today.
What do you mean they're going to take $100,000 off?
In other words, the government pays the bank $100,000 automatically.
Okay.
That's off your mortgage.
Oh, so it's off your principal.
Yeah, off your principal.
Oh, cool.
Yes, cool. How much money is that? That's $600 a month to you.
On your payment?
On your payment.
Okay.
$600 a month, gone, out of your payments. Now you have the cash. What does that do? that puts every single home in America from underwater back to even, except for obviously there's some that is so hopelessly underwater or whatever. But it puts people back to even on their homes. It reduces the amount they have to pay, lowers their monthly payments, and the government down the road is just basically taking a bet in American housing, saying, you know what, in the next 30 years, we'll get our money back.
They're probably right.
Uh-huh. They get an asset, so it's not like they're giving money. It's not like they're throwing money down the black hole for the banks. They get an actual asset.
And then the homeowner gets the...
And the money goes into the economy and boosts the GDP.
Or somebody could start their own business or whatever.
And by the way, why are we bailing out the banks? We're bailing out the banks because the homeowners are defaulting. If you stop the homeowners from defaulting, you don't need to bail out the banks.
Well, aren't the homeowners defaulting now because they don't have a job?
Yeah, they're defaulting because they don't have a job, but if you lower the payments to $600 a month, if you lower
sure.
payments from $1,200 a month to $600 a month, then somebody can take a job that pays less.
There's a lot of very creative and startling home mods going on. Is that a lot of that coming from government money, or are the mortgage companies just smart enough to just get a little bit if they think the person's going to default?
It depends. Your local banks, the ones who hold mortgages, are very flexible because they're screwed. They're not getting bailed out by the government the way the big banks are,
like Wells Fargo and
so
those.
Yeah, so they're doing anything they can to save their portfolios,
right?
And they're making very creative deals. The big banks, they're not so interested. They make the deal the government lets them make. The government has programs, and they'll make a government program deal because it doesn't cost them nothing to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It benefits them, so they'll make that. But you can get some real creative deals from your local banks, but unfortunately, not a lot of people have their mortgages held by local banks.
I've got several friends, though, that have done some really, really great deals with this home mod with the bigger banks.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Like, what kind of deal, though?
Oh, check this one out. I personally know this person. This happened. Their principal was $560,000. Mm-hmm. Their payment was $2,300 tax title license, right,
mm-hmm.
for that deal because they had a 5% note. $3,300, excuse me, 5% note.
Yeah.
Makes sense?
Yeah.
They set aside $340,000, just set it aside in a pile, say, we're not going to worry about this for 40 years, gave them a 2% note mortgage for 5 years on the 220, and then after 5 years it goes to 5%, never higher than 5, payment of like $1,300 a month, tax title license for 40 years.
What?
Yes. And...
Where do you get that?
And...
Get me one of those.
Yeah. And so, after 40 years,
Was he bankrupt or something?
No, he was behind on his payments, I think, like 8 or 9 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, that's the problem, unfortunately. If you want to get those deals, you have to stop paying your mortgage.
Isn't that amazing? Now, of course...
They're never going to offer that to me because I pay my mortgage.
Yeah, right. He's always got to pay... My friend always going to have to pay the $340 back. And it's not like they just took it away.
Yeah, but that's a great deal.
Oh, of course it's a great deal. Can you imagine?
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
But you have to... Again, it goes back to you don't get those deals unless you're defaulting.
Oh. But that's not a good idea to
frankly, it is, but that's beside the
point. Yeah, you don't want to encourage people to do that. But what about...
I don't know. I'm really getting to the point where I almost feel like encouraging a mass...
Something to do.
Yeah, for the American...
What do you think about, though, when we talked about, like, the banks or the government, they just borrow newly created money and inflate the monetary system to, like, do solar panels. What about the whole corporatocracy, government involvement, socialist kind of stuff? Does that concern you?
Well, it concerns...
I mean, like GM, buying GM.
First of all, it concerns me that people say socialism as if it's some kind of horrible thing.
Uh-huh.
Whereas, you have a society, and the purpose of society is to work together to solve problems.
Yes.
And we have problems like people can't eat, and people can't live in a home, and people can't pay for their bills.
Yeah, we should figure out a way to help them, right?
Societal problem, and you solve it through societal measures. And if you want to call that socialism, that's fine, but don't spit it out like it's some kind of disease.
Like a social disease.
Yeah, that's what bothers me the most is mm-hmm. this concept of like helping people and trying to like make sure people get medical care is some weakness in people.
Uh-huh.
That there's something wrong with us defective Americans that we think a person who's sick should be able to go to a doctor.
Well,
how did we get this way?
What about the concept, though, that if people are not really helping themselves and you help them, you're just making them weaker?
There's an argument for that, but mm-hmm. I mean, look, if...
But if somebody really needs help, I mean, why,
let me tell you something.
Why can't we help our brothers and sisters?
If you lost your job and all your money tomorrow.
Right.
All right? And you let's say you're injured, God forbid, and something, you know, like you just can't work, you get hurt, and you lose your job, and it's hard to get anything at home, and you're just screwed. Now your bank wants to foreclose, you had credit card bills, and so on and so forth.
Right.
All right? Now, is helping you a bad idea?
No.
Is trying to get you through a period of time when there are, I mean, because it's not like people, again, this is what drives me crazy. The unemployed people aren't lazy. There are 10 unemployed people for every job opening. So you could say that 10% of them might be lazy because they should take those damn jobs.
Hmm.
But 90% of those people, it doesn't matter what they want to do. There aren't that many jobs. So what are they supposed to do? How are they supposed to get work? How is that being lazy? But I'll tell you what's lazy, and it goes back to what I was saying before. The entrepreneurial spirit in this country is dead. It's been crushed. You know, to the point where I tell you, you know, I want to organize homeless people. How does that work? It's like, it works like a company. You get people who have skills, you put them together, and you start a company.
Yeah, right, right. Mm-hmm.
It's not hard. This is how we built this country, but everybody forgot how we built this country.
Mm.
The only solution is to go work for some jackass corporation that's taking bailouts from the government and wants to pay you peanuts because they get most of their labor overseas. That's our only solution?
Yeah, it's got to be better than that, right, Phil? I mean,
those profits, that $6 trillion in corporate profits, is there for the taking by people who want to work in this country. If people got together and used their heads, you can take that money from those corporations because it's profit. And profit can always be taken by someone who's willing to work harder.
In other words, they're providing some kind of a service somewhere that you can overtake.
That's right.
Yeah.
They're making $6 trillion. You don't need to make $6 trillion. You'll be happy with less, won't you?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
You can get by with less than $6 trillion. $6 million would make you happy, right?
So what do you think the real... we've heard numbers in the range of 20% of the real unemployment. Do you think that's accurate?
Yeah.
Do you?
Yes.
Well, where are these jobs going to come from, Phil Davis?
Where are the jobs going to come from?
Where are they going to come? How are we going to put these 20% of people back?
I have a socialist program to do that.
Okay, let's be a socialist.
Step one is I give everybody who has a mortgage in America has $600 a month more to spend.
Oh, no, but let's talk about something real, because nobody's going to do this.
Nobody's going to do it.
Because it's too good of an idea. No.
Here's my other too good of an idea.
Okay.
We have a decaying infrastructure of our electric grid, right?
And bridges and everything.
You know, mostly the grid is like a horrendous situation.
Correct. Yeah.
We're actually going to start having blackouts, and you know, probably within 10 years on this grid, it just needs to be fixed or we're screwed. So, what I propose, and you know these numbers better than I do, is I propose that we begin installing solar panels on the roof of every viable home in America at no cost at all to the consumers,
mm-hmm.
and we bill them back one half of their current electric bill until it's paid off.
So the homeowner is going to be paying 1.5 what they normally pay right now?
No, one half.
Oh, that one half because of their bill after the panels are installed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's
cool. In other words, you will now pay one half of your bill for the solar panels, and we go to every home in America, which is probably about 20 million, 30 million homes that have good roofs, you know, that could be set up for solar. And the government puts 5 million people to work doing, and we have these people, they're all the unemployed construction workers that
sure.
are around anyway.
Yeah.
You start putting these people to work, putting and installing roofs, and that will start factories, and you only buy American parts and only buy from American companies. And you put factories to work, you start the industry humming, you make it a very profitable venture for now the capitalism internally could start, people could start investing in better solar systems and so on and so forth inside America, because we're only going to accept money from American corporations that make things in America.
Mm-hmm.
And you buy your product there, and now you've got this incredible flow of capital. And what would it be, about 50,000 a house, do you think?
Oh, are you going to put in a whole system?
Yeah.
Yo, yeah, at least if you're going to run AC, boy, it's tough.
Okay.
It's tough.
But like I said, you know, you start out with the most viable homes, and over the years, they'll improve it. You know, over a 5-year period, there'll be improvements in the system.
Sure.
Also.
Sure.
Right? Don't you think if we invest billions of dollars into the technology, that we'll be able to improve it?
We have systems that I'm working into where you can actually sell the stuff I don't use back to the utility company.
Uh-huh.
It's called a Sunny Boy system.
Yes, I like that. That's another nice thing, but that's... that's, you know, that's a side benefit if you have it.
Yeah.
But I'm saying that basically you want to just install systems. And so let's, you know, it doesn't matter what it costs because, again, it's going to be effectively a government lease. The government's going to pay for it now. They're going to get the money back over time,
mm-hmm.
paid back by the homeowner who's paying their electric bill now. The electric bills don't go away.
Right.
So you're just replacing that bill, and people will be working, millions of people.
And look at the good you're doing for the air.
And we're decreasing our need for foreign oil.
Yeah, and you're decreasing the amount of mercury pollution with the coal-fired plants, and that's an issue.
Yeah, it's many, many side benefits. But I'm saying just even on an economic, straightforward perspective, you're cutting people's electric bills in half, and the average person spends $2,500 a year on energy.
Right. So I guess the magic question is, and I'm going to let you go because I know you got things to do.
You got to go get in your underwear
and get your snickerdoodles and see what's going on. Just kidding. So why? I mean, you obviously think about this stuff a lot, and you write about it on your website, philstockworld.com. Why? I mean, this is so naive, but I'm going to ask it. Why did the government will never do something like this? So good, so practical and so beneficial. What do you think is going on?
What do I think is going on? I think the Republicans have filibustered 180 bills that have come up before Congress out of 210. 180 have been filibustered since Obama took office. That's why.
You're not really saying if the Democrats were in control that they would do something this creative, do you?
Yeah, I am.
Really?
Yeah. I hate to tell you, but I actually sit down at Democratic Party things and talk to people, and yeah, they would.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's...
If you stop calling them communists and socialists, and you stop saying they're ruining America by spending money to help Americans, yeah, they would.
Okay.
And you need to make the people aware of this. The people of America have to say, we want this done. We think these are good programs. The people of America have to have the will to help Americans, not help corporations. Corporations are not America.
How about the people that you run into from day to day on the street, on the phone? What's the general sentiment of folks just about the overall economy and the future of this country? Is it, where is it? 10 would be like the most productive, optimistic ever, and then 1 would be like, "Where's my gun and my food?"
I live in New Jersey.
All right. Well,
we're not.
You guys just look for bodies up there, man.
I'm just saying. Look, I go to restaurants; they're packed. I go to the mall; it's packed. I go to movie theaters; they're packed. Okay, people are not. People think the economy sucks, so I'd say the number, if you want a number, is about a 5.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because they're being told the economy sucks. You know, the reason you have a depression is because everyone gets depressed and doesn't want to spend money and doesn't want to do anything to fix anything. That's what a depression is. A depression is a recession where nobody fixes it.
And the powers that be control the press, so they do it.
Mm-hmm. So that's true. That same top 30,000 people, they control all the media. Everything you read, everything you hear, everything you see other than stuff like this is controlled by large corporations. And they give you the message they want to give you. And what's their message? Tax breaks are what we need. You know, it's insane. I mean, people don't understand. I write about this a lot. I mean, people do not understand that when they talk about taking the money of rich people, they're talking about these 30,000 people that have one-third of the money in the world.
But they did work. They did, well, maybe, yeah, but they,
I mean, they
did work for it.
What?
They do almost work for it.
It doesn't matter if they work for it or not. You've got they're paying an average of 17% taxes. What do you pay? Do you pay 17%?
Probably more.
Yeah, of course you do. All the Democrats are saying is make them pay what regular people pay. Because you know how much money that would be? That would be $500 billion a year more collected by the government. 10% of the $6 trillion in corporate profits, 10% of the profits of these 30,000 people at the top 0.01% is $500 billion a year. That's their income. They still have 90% more. Don't worry about them.
Well, Phil Davis, you're an interesting guy, and we really got more for our money here than we expected. So thanks for spending some time with us. It's philstockworld.com. If you just tuned in, he did a whole hour on his whole idea of selling options when you're buying stock, and pretty interesting stuff. philstockworld.com, and you have opportunities for people to become subscribers and also premium members where you teach them how to do this, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, don't eat too many snickerdoodles.
Yeah, thanks.
Phil, thanks a lot. We
all
enjoyed
talking to you. Take care.
We enjoyed talking to you. Bye-bye.